While you're turning there, let me make a few announcements. Today, we're going to head to the park after being together here for a picnic. So if you are able to join us, we'd love to see you there. If you haven't prepared for a picnic, don't worry. Mrs. Hills has sorted you out. There's plenty of food. So we're going to head over to Barnes Park after the service today. If you are able to join us, we'd love to see you there. Spend some time together fellowshipping. Let me do these in order. Wednesday night, we're here together praying. So if you are able to join us, we'd love to see you there. It was a lovely experience on Wednesday to be together again in the building praying together. And if you are able to join us, it would be lovely to have you with us as we do that. Wednesday the 28th of June, this is advance notice, there is a prayer meeting in Newcastle Elim with all the Elim churches in the region gathering together to pray together. If you want to go, but it seems like a difficult place to get to, let us know and we'll do our best to assist you in transporting you there. And then Saturday the 1st of July, I think it is, we at Side Youth for Christ have a quiz night with pie and peas in Bethany City Church as a fundraiser. So I think the tickets are £10. But if you want to go, my best suggestion is speak to Louise and she'll be able to point you in the right direction. If you don't want to go but you just want to support the work of We Are Side Youth for Christ and give them some money, they'll appreciate that as well. So by all means do that and speak to Louise again. John 7, and I'm going to read from verse 14. It says, not until halfway through the festival did Jesus go up to the temple courts and begin to teach. The Jews were amazed and asked, how did this man get such learning without having been taught? Jesus answered, my teaching is not my own. It comes from the one who sent me. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent me is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. Has Moses not given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me? You are demon-possessed, the crowd answered. Who is trying to kill you? Jesus said to them, I did one miracle and you were all amazed. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision, though actually it did not come from Moses but from the patriarchs, you circumcise a boy on the Sabbath. Now if a boy can be circumcised on the Sabbath so the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing a man's whole body on the Sabbath? Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. At that point, some of the people of Jerusalem began to ask, isn't this the man they are trying to kill? Here he is speaking publicly, and they are not saying a word to him. Have the authorities really concluded that he is the Messiah? We gave some thought last week to Luke chapter 10 and Jesus sending out the 72. Or I tried to give some thought to it. And Luke 10, verse 20, Jesus says to the 72, don't rejoice that the Spirit submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. And that's a perspective that I think really matters. My satisfaction doesn't come from my earthly action, but my eternal position. And Jesus goes up to the festival, halfway through it, begins teaching, and the crowd are amazed. And then he explains his teaching's not his own. Because anybody who teaches of themselves glorifies themselves. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. And I want to try and talk to you this morning about the goal of me glorifying him, not me. The goal of me glorifying him, not me. And let me explain why. I tried to encourage you that there's a harvest last week, that there are souls ready to come, that there are people who believe already in God, have decided that, but they need somebody to bring them into the kingdom. But I wonder if sometimes the challenge in being obedient to the things Christ has called us to is the absence of glory we find in them. If I could guarantee to you this morning that every person you prayed for would get healed, and every person you spoke the gospel to would be in awe at the revelatory truth of the words that come from your mouth, and every person that you encountered might encounter him as a result of your obedience, and every time you stepped out in faithful obedience, you saw the miraculous provision of God in every instance, I don't think many of us would have a difficulty in going obediently. If every time it worked the way we expected it to, it would be much, much easier, wouldn't it, to go and do it? If every time it was glorious, I would find it much, much easier to go with confidence. But that's not been my experience. And I don't think it's meant to be my expectation. John 15 and verse 18. If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you're of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. Everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. 1 John 3 and verse 13. Do not be surprised, my brothers and sisters, if the world hates you. Apparently, I'm not expected to have a great reception in the world. Apparently, I'm not expected to go from this place and expect everybody to welcome me with open arms, and the message that I have and the truth that I've come to proclaim, go, oh, brilliant, thank you for coming, Josh. Let's all get saved now. Actually, my expectation should be that it might not be brilliantly received in the world. So Jesus arrives at the festival, begins to teach, and they're amazed at his teaching because of an absence of education. How did this man get such learning without having been taught? It's impressive, but it's more impressive because he's not educated. And Jesus makes it clear the source of his teaching is not himself. And he's not come to glorify himself. He's come to glorify the Father. And then he says this thing about Moses and them trying to kill him. And how quickly it turns from amazement to accusation. Let me read it to you again. The Jews were amazed and asked, "How did this man get such learning without having been taught?" Jesus answered, "My teaching is not my own. It comes from the one who sent me. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory, but he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. Has not Moses given you the law, yet not one of you keeps the law? Why are you trying to kill me?" "You are demon-possessed," the crowd said. "Who is trying to kill you?" Apparently, they've now decided it's not impressive, but quite ugly. But he isn't speaking for his own personal glory. He seeks to glorify the one who sent him. John 8 and verse 54, Jesus says, "If I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, who you claim is your God, is the one who glorifies me." There's an interesting moment following the feeding of 5,000. John 6 and verse 15 says, "Jesus, knowing they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself." He's fed the 5,000. They're excited about it. And they want to make him king now. But he's not seeking his own glory. He's not looking for personal acclaim. So he goes up a mountain. He's done something incredibly impressive, but he isn't hanging around for people to celebrate him, to triumph him. Matthew 14, verse 21, recording the same moment, says, "The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray." Jesus sought to glorify God, not find personal glory. But glory is alluring. When Jesus is tempted in the wilderness, Matthew 4 and verse 8 says, "Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, 'All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me.' Jesus said to him, 'Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only.' Then the devil left him and angels came and attended him." Jesus has gone to be tempted in the wilderness by the devil. He takes him to a high place, shows him the kingdom of the world and their glory. And he says, "I'll give you them." And if Christ was seeking personal glory, that's a moment, right? They can be yours. It isn't temptation if there's nothing tempting about it. Does that make sense? It isn't temptation if there's nothing tempting about it. If we're going to go to Barnes Park later, if I pick up a stick and go, "Can I tempt you to eat this?" None of you are going to think, I need to fight the urge right now. I need to control myself in this moment, because that's really, there's nothing tempting about it, right? So it's not temptation unless it's there's something to it that gives you some sense of, I want that. And glory's enjoyable. There's this really sad verse in John 12. John 12 and verse 42 says, many even of the authorities believed in him, but for fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so that they would not be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. Glory's enjoyable. They've encountered Jesus. They believe in him. But they love the glory that comes from man. They're satisfied in that. So rather than acknowledge the truth of who Christ is and risk losing the thing that they love, they don't. And the glory of others can be deceiving. John 5 and verse 43 says, I've come in my Father's name and you do not accept me. But if someone else comes in his own name, you will accept him. How can you believe since you accept glory from one another, but do not seek the glory that comes from the only God? How can you believe since you accept glory from one another? Their acceptance of glory from one another without seeking the glory that comes from God apparently inhibits their ability to believe. And my pursuit of personal glory, I'm going to suggest, will lead me to hypocrisy. Matthew 23 and verse 5, speaking of the Pharisees, Jesus says, everything they do is done for people to see. Everything they do is done for people to see. So in Matthew 6 and verse 1, Jesus warns us not to be like the hypocrites who practice their righteousness publicly so it can be seen by others. In verse 2, I'm not meant to practice my giving publicly so it can be seen by others. Verse 5, I'm not meant to pray publicly to be seen by others. Verse 16, I'm not meant to fast to show others I'm fasting. But the reality is, when I want glory for myself, for you to celebrate how wonderful I am, what I do is do everything for you to see it. Right? So Jesus says in Matthew 23 and verse 27, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of bones, dead bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. I can end up a whitewashed tomb because I want people to see me, because my concern is primarily about how you perceive me. I'm going to suggest to you that if I am seeking my glory, what it will lead to is pretentious practice, because I can't afford you to see weakness in me. And the pretentious practice results in me being a whitewashed tomb, because actually now I live inconsistently to who I am. I do things for your benefit publicly. I do things in order to be seen. Let me read Matthew 23 and verse 5 again. Everything they do is done for people to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to be called rabbi by others. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher and you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one father and he is in heaven. Nor are you to be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Messiah. The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. I'm not meant to seek personal glory. I'm meant to glorify God. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31. Whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. But I think there's this tension, because I live in a culture where people want to build their platforms, where people want to be recognized and known, where fame is desirable. I'm not here for me. I'm here for him. Whatever I do is not for my own benefit. I'm doing it to his glory. The life I live is meant not to build me. But to glorify him. So Christ glorified God in his faithful obedience. John 17 and verse 4. I have brought you glory on earth by finishing the work you gave me to do. So in John 7 and verse 18, he makes it clear he's not speaking of his own. He's outworking the will of the Father. John 10, he does in his Father's name. I think I glorify God primarily in my faithful obedience, in doing what he says. And here's the challenge of that. That might not be glorious for me. We read together a few moments ago of some opportunities Christ was given to attain his own personal glory. He had the opportunity, never mind what the devil was offering, but to run with the crowd who wanted to make him king by force. He had the opportunity to go, well, this is what the people want. And what he does is walk away from that. And where he ends up is on a cross. Despised and rejected. I think that's fascinating. Because there's nothing about it that seems glorious for Christ in that moment. Yet he absolutely glorified God. And I have an expectation sometimes that in outworking the will of God in my life, in being obedient to what he says, the outcome is glorious for me. I'm not sure that's biblical. I'm not sure that my name is meant to end up in everybody's mouths. actually, I might walk away feeling despised, rejected, belittled, betrayed, and God still be glorified in the process. I might walk away feeling like, what was the point? But I was obedient to what he instructed me to do, and so God will be glorified through my obedience. My good works glorify God, not me. Matthew 5, verse 16. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. My fruitfulness glorifies God, not me. John 15 and verse 8. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. My weakness is so God gets glory, not me. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 7, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. In life or death, my life is his and for him. Romans 14 verse 8, if we live, we live for the Lord, and if we die, we die for the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. Whatever happens in my life, I'm already glorified. I think that's what Romans 8 and verse 30 says. Those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. Those he justified, he also glorified. That is already done. So I don't need you to say nice things about me. I don't need you to know my name. I don't need to have a great reputation. I'm glorified in heaven. I am seated with Christ in heavenly places this morning. That is my position. I can't do anything to earn the glory that I've already got. But I can get obsessed with what other people think of me. I can be consumed with attaining personal glory here. I can love the glory of man more than the glory of God. And the result of that isn't great. We're going to break bread together this morning. Celebrating the fact that on the cross, Christ made a public spectacle out of principalities and powers, triumphing over them. We're going to rejoice in the fact that he died. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't pleasant. But it was utterly glorious. And because he humbled himself and was obedient to death, even death on the cross, God has exalted him to the highest place and given him a name that is above all other names, that at his name every knee shall bow and every tongue will confess. He is Lord to the glory of God. Every tongue will confess he is Lord to the glory of God. That's a fascinating statement. So we proclaim his death till he comes. And I want to urge you, whatever people think, whatever they've got to say, however you're perceived, do what he says. Don't wait till you feel like it's all going to be glorious. Because my obedience is a place where God is glorified in my life. Perhaps two or three of you would like to lead us in thanksgiving as we break bread together.